Well, happy Thursday, the Thursday before Thanksgiving week. And just a quick program note, because of the impending holiday, Perspectives will not be aired next week here on WFSU. We'll give everyone an opportunity to catch up with family and friends and commiserate and abundantly overindulge, and then we'll be back the following week. But before we get underway this week, a reminder, you are always welcome to be part of the conversation, however that might lead, especially via email and Twitter today, because we have a couple of guests on the telephone, and it makes it a little bit of a challenge technically to get everybody all hooked together. So you can reach us, perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address, and we'll include that into our conversation here. We are also airing this edition of Perspectives not only via WFSU in Tallahassee, but also on WFSW in Panama City. And hey, folks, hope everything is coming along for you. We understand the challenges out in that part of the world. And given that, we just learned the 14th Judicial Circuit Medical Examiner's Office has released the names of 30 folks who have died in relation to Hurricane Michael. And of those 30, 21 were in Bay County, and some of the victims have yet to be identified. And so the toll in lives certainly is the most appalling aspect of that storm that came and visited us just over a month ago. But the devastation continues to impact the living, and that's our prime focus on this program. So let's meet the panel, and we're going to talk about what has transpired here in the greater Tallahassee area and how many of those resources have been made available out west. And we have some folks who are also in the western part of the state, and they'll be joining us as well. With us in studio, we say hi to Deanna Frazier with the Office of External Affairs of FEMA. That is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and certainly one of the busiest ladies that we could probably imagine over the past month. Thanks for coming in, Deanna.
Thank you so much.
We also say hi to an old friend, Kevin Peters, the head of Leon County Emergency Management. You've been a pretty busy guy too here, Kev.
It's been busy, yes, sir. But thanks for having us this morning. We appreciate it.
And we appreciate your coming in to talk about what has been going on, along with your buddy Rob McGarrah, City of Tallahassee's Electric Utility Manager. And good to see you again, Rob.
Glad to be here.
Also from the Leon County Administration side, Matthew Cavell. And thanks for helping put all this together, Matthew.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And joining us on the phone, Michael Martin, 211 Northwest Florida Manager, United Way of Escambia County. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And along with you on the phone, Beth Tracy, IBM Corporate Citizenship Manager. Hi, Beth.
Hi, good morning. Great to be here this morning, and thank you for including IBM.
Okay, and we'll be talking more about what you guys have been doing relative to the disaster just passed and perhaps disasters yet to come as we go forward. Quick overview here of how we have recovered in the greater Tallahassee and Leon County area. And let's start with you, Kevin Peters, because we had this community gathering here the other night over at the United Methodist Church downtown. You guys had wanted to hear from people, a gripe session, how have we recovered, what could we be doing better, all that. It wasn't exactly what you call an outpouring of citizen rage. It was a pretty tame affair, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, it was. And, just a couple of public speakers. We had one state agency that had some information to share. Some positive feedback. We had one individual that had some questions about telephone service. He needed to get reconnected. But one of the nice things that actually it turned into was an opportunity for, with the number of staff we had on hand, we could turn it into a one-on-one question and answer session with anybody that had particular issues. Maybe they weren't comfortable getting up in front of a large group to talk about it. But with the number of staff we had on site, both city, county, as well as our partners from FEMA, the people that did attend had the opportunity to have that direct one-on-one contact and talk about their experiences and any ongoing issues they had. So that was actually a very nice kind of change of what we've done in the past, where it was people could come up and tell us about things. That one-on-one experience, I think, is kind of where we're going with our preparedness. People are getting better prepared pre-storm. All the responders here, dealing with storms, we're getting a lot of experience. We're very sharp on how we do things, and our anticipation is very good of when we need to do certain things. So that, I guess that's the byproduct of three straight years of being affected by tropical weather, is that we're all as a community very, very well experienced and very well prepared.
Okay, and Rob McGarrison, since that was the big bailiwick here of Hermine 2 years ago, I'm not going to say that the city of Tallahassee was ill-prepared. You had policies and procedures and protocols in place. Most of them developed way, way back in 1985 when barely Tropical Storm Cade came through. But you kind of get rusty after a while. We all do if you don't experience this stuff. And in the past 25 months, boy, there have been some big changes.
Yeah, we very seriously looked at how we responded to Hermine and identified a number of lessons learned and revised our plans, and we put those plans into effect for Michael, and they work very well for us.
Okay. Deanna Frazier, you've, as FEMA's external affairs person here, and seeming to be everywhere all at once with the many responses that the federal agency has had here, as of right now, where do we stand? What's open? What is still available to people throughout this area? Just give us a quick thumbnail.
Well, FEMA's been working diligently with our state, local, and county partners to register more than 95,000 Floridians. And right here in Leon County, 6,200 have registered for assistance. These are families here in Florida that are saying, we need help.
Okay, and you are starting to close down some of the FEMA centers right now, but some of them still remain open, right?
Yes, we have 16 open between our fixed site disaster recovery centers and our mobile disaster recovery centers that are across the 12 declared counties at this time. Some of those mobile DRCs move around, and so they'll be at a site for a week, and then they move to another site for a week to get as much coverage as we possibly can in the declared counties. So, you know, because those fixed sites may be a long ways for a survivor to get to, those mobile DRCs really are helpful to them.
Okay. I wanted to get up with the guys here behind the glass. You said you had someone who was waiting online to speak with us. Can we kind of put that into the mix here? Is that possible, Evan? Okay. Terrific. And then we will transcribe that and then bring that to you here. Michael Martin, out in Escambia County, even though you were not directly in Michael's line of fire, I understand that through the 211 service in the greater Pensacola area, you guys were kind of like a clearinghouse for emergency information during and after the storm?
Right. 211 is a human information line that's available 24/7 throughout the year, not just during times of disaster. So luckily, the residents of the area are very familiar with the service and know that it is a point of contact that they can make to find out information on evacuation orders, shelter locations, a whole variety of resources that they need to be aware of as the storm approaches and passes.
All right. Now, in the wake of the storm, certainly that immediacy that you were just talking about as far as availability of emergency supplies or shelters or all that has abated. What are you guys hearing now as far as inquiries from folks who still need help in that area?
Well, you're still seeing the whole recovery process. You know, it doesn't get fixed in a day, it doesn't get fixed in a month, and it's certainly not going to be fixed in a year. So we're having calls from folks that are still looking for assistance with simple things like debris cleanup, food assistance. Is, you know, a lot of folks are still dealing with a lack of power. Even though the power lines are up, individual lines to houses may not be up. So you still have a need for food because food storage issues may be an issue for an individual family. So we see a lot of individual calls for the simple things in life. As I said, the food, the water, shelter, cleanup, that's still going on full time.
And if we can just throw in a comment here that our Liddell got from Christy, who gave us a call. She wanted to comment on her home area, which is in Gulf County. She says her home was hit really hard. They were not ready for the floodwaters and the surge. And we forget about that the areas closer to the prime circulation of the storm were accompanied by a lot of water. We didn't see that here in Tallahassee-Leon County to that great an extent. She thinks Gulf County should have had a mandatory evacuation plan, and she wants to make sure that there is continuing to be a focus on her area as they go through recovery. And that was something, Rob, we didn't have that here, really.
We've got a facility down in St. Mark's that we were worried about the storm surge. Fortunately, it didn't get high enough to cause any damage at our facility. But that is a big coastal issue with storms like this. That's in addition to the wind is the storm surge and how you have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, because Bo Lynn's grocery down there in St. Mark's says she got about, 4.5, almost 5 feet of water, and I think, in the thing. And you got a power plant down there, which is right up the road.
Yeah, and we had a couple feet of water on the plant site, but it didn't get into any of our equipment.
Okay, and Deanna Fraser, if I can ask you, as far as the flooding type of situation, was that a big deal for FEMA in those areas, as well as the windstorm damage?
Oh, absolutely. And, only about 10% of those individuals who experienced flood damage had National Flood Insurance Program policies. And so, because that storm surge came in quite a ways, and so these are people who may not have been in the floodplain and therefore were not required by their mortgagee to have flood insurance. And so those are the individuals who are uninsured and underinsured that register for FEMA and may be eligible for assistance.
And that's going to mean redrawing of like 100-year floodplain maps and all that kind of stuff that really determines who might be eligible for flood insurance then.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation. And again, because of the folks we have on the telephone lines here, it makes it technically a little bit difficult to interface everybody. If you could make your comment available to us via email, perspectives@wfsu.org, we would like to include that in our conversation as we talk about the recovery phase here from Hurricane Michael, where we are now and where we still need to go. That's all coming up right here on Perspectives on WFSU and also WFSW Panama City. Welcome back to Perspectives, our special post-storm analysis. That sounds a little bit wonky. It's actually just a conversation on what happened in the immediate fallout from Hurricane Michael, particularly in areas that were hardest hit, which is why our signal is also going over to our station WFSW in Panama City right now. Matthew Cavell with Leon County Administration. We were talking about some of the things yet to be done, and I know you've been in contact with our county administrator, Vince Long, and all those folks here. Do you see any kinds of asks that we may be making that all counties in this area might be making as far as the legislature is concerned? Because there's a lot of stuff that we can't do and they have to.
So at the federal and state level, there will be funding made available, and we will be pursuing that both through the legislative process, but also through the hazard mitigation grant process and other local mitigation strategies. So one of the things that we've identified is a need for generators within facilities to operate as shelters, whether they be special needs shelters or whether general population shelters. We know that the state has standards of the cost-benefit analysis for how that works and the importance that we have in our community to bring that into our shelters to make sure sure that we provide the best care where we can during disaster. So there are definitely going to be a laundry list of things. As you know, our after-action reports that we put together after disaster are long and involved, and they've helped us improve to the point that we are today. In that, there will be those considerations that we make asks of the federal and state governments to better improve us for the next disaster, which you can almost set your watch by now.
Something else, though, that may change as a result of legislation is, for instance, changes in building codes, because we have had, I don't want to say less stringent codes here in this area, but in comparison to what is in Central and South Florida, certainly that is true. And if we do that, we remember the old slab-type beach houses. You're down there on 98, you're going between, say, Sop Choppy and Carabel, and you see some of these places that were just on a concrete slab. Many of those are gone, or at least uninhabitable right now, and probably will not be rebuilt if those codes change. And there will be changes to insurance law and all of that. Are we looking at potentially folks who will not be able to return to this area, do you think, guys? I'll just throw that out. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think we've seen everywhere that there has been disaster, people always come back. I don't think that people will not come back. It may be different people. New opportunities may arise. You know, there will be people that come back, but unfortunately, like you said, those that were there, some of those may not come back. They may relocate because they don't want to be close to the Gulf of Mexico or any ocean anymore. They want to go somewhere inland. They feel safer living in a new place. And unfortunately, some folks, they may not have the means to come back, and wherever they've evacuated to following the storm is going to be their new home. But on the whole, you know, Florida will rebuild. There will be new people that come in, and over time we'll see a rebuilding of our Gulf Coast. It's not going to be abandoned.
Yeah, and Michael Martin, after Ivan, I remember over in the Pensacola area, there were a significant number of people who decided, okay, that's it, no more. And they went elsewhere. Have you seen any of that in the wake of Michael?
I wouldn't say specifically a lot of families making that decision initially, but after Ivan, I can tell you the challenge is going to be experienced now is the number of families displaced as compared to the number of available living options, they don't equate. So some folks will have to make the decision to relocate for the simple purpose of finding a habitable place to live. I don't know if that makes sense, but there might have been five apartments destroyed, and those five families now need apartments. But if there's only two available, the other three families have to make some decisions. And I think that's what everybody's going to have to look at individually. Like the gentleman said, there'll be people moving into the area to help with recovery that will become new residents. There'll be people who will move closer to family members in other parts of the country that are away from the coast. There'll be a lot of decisions made by folks that will be influenced by housing availability. If that was what I learned from Ivan.
Okay, and the same thing could occur as far as the affordability of those properties as well. If you leverage in additional requirements as far as reconstruction costs because of building codes and realigned insurance liability, all that kind of thing, it may be just downright impossible for people to afford to come back to the area because of the increased cost that's attendant to that, right?
Well, from my experience in the Ivan period, the affordable housing market for the population, you know, in the middle and lower income areas, those facilities were damaged the most, and they are replaced by newer resources that, as you pointed out, cost more to construct, and therefore the costs go up. That's just part of the way the system works in this world, and people understand that. There was certainly not frustration with that. It was just that accommodations had to be made. Decisions had to be made. Is this where I can continue to live? Great. If not, what are my options? But you're right. The reconstruction costs are going to influence the basic housing market, whether that's from apartments to mobile homes to new homes. There will be changes, and people will have to accommodate them.
While we are on the subject here of communication, and Kevin Peters, you had said here to the one person who had called in from Gulf County before, there was actually a mandatory evacuation for Gulf County, right?
Yeah, we did just a quick search, and on that Monday, October 8th, about 10 a.m., they did issue a mandatory evacuation. The info I have right at hand is I don't know the full extent of the areas that were ordered, but Gulf County government did issue mandatory evacuations for areas in the coastal zones. Starting at that point. So it very well could have been a communications issue that not everybody received the message. And that's a challenge during disasters. That's something that Leon County heard after Hermine. And that's one of those places that, you know, having gone through this before, that we were able to learn from that lesson and improve our communications methods over these last two storms with our improved app, Citizens Connect app, our partnership here with WFSU Radio, having the radio journalists at the EOC that can provide updates from the multitude of agencies that are working in our EOC. So, again, just to make a point that they did issue the mandatory evacuation, but how that got out and how it got communicated, I can't speak to that, but I know it was put out.
Well, while we're talking about communications, Beth Tracy, let's bring you in on the discussion here as IBM Corporate Citizenship Manager. You have some new technology that is being brought to bear on this entire subject of communicating during a disaster. Talk about that a little bit. What do you guys have?
Absolutely, and I do want to say that you know, without the strategic partnership of United Way Worldwide and 211, IBM would not be able to provide these technological solutions where we really focus on addressing, you know, critical societal issues like we're discussing today. So let's talk a little bit about what we were able to develop. It's a virtual agent or a chatbot, and this was developed for Florida 211 service. The cognitive technology that we developed is an interactive conversation agent. It's available in English and Spanish, whereby you use natural language processing and augmented intelligence to understand what the user is asking. So during a disaster, users interact with the chatbot just as they would with a human being. And augmented intelligence allows the chatbot to understand the intent of their question and to provide the correct response. And due to the overwhelming call response that 211 receives when disaster strikes, this enables the user to get specific information for their urgent needs. So it's really focused on the response and to alleviate the overwhelming call, public inquiries for storm-related information that come to 211 immediately. You can have a conversation through the chatbot interface. So if I want to find evacuation areas, but I say, can I go to evacuation areas, the intent through the conversation of the chatbot will provide me with an answer even if I'm not exactly sure what I'm asking. And this is because of the data that was provided from United Way and especially 211 so that those intents and answers are accurate and trusted and they're also specific to what your needs are.
Okay, so it's very similar then, since folks are now getting used to talking to inanimate electronic objects like Siri, tell me where there's a shelter, or Alexa, should I evacuate now or wait until, is it that sort of thing?
It is, but it's more personalized to what your needs are. So especially with the data that United Way was able to provide us with and looking at the SMS data from the 211 calls, that's how this information is provided. So you know that it's information that you can trust and that you're going to have directed to your attention. What's really important to keep in mind here is that as a point of clarification, Carla is only activated by United Way and 211 as a disaster response. So when we actually move into that phase of relief and recovery efforts, much with the information that Mike Martin was sharing with us, 211 provides free confidential services. So this cognitive conversation agent is actually activated only when disaster strikes and the response rate is overwhelming within that state.
Okay, but it also lets the interfacer, if I can put it that way, it lets them know that, hey, I'm active, I'm ready to go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So just on a little bit of a personal note, I managed to get to Florida just in time for Hurricane Irma. What a welcome to the Sunshine State. And with that being said, we started to enrich our technological solutions through our disaster resiliency portfolio within IBM based on what we're hearing from the community. What are the needs, and how can we serve those needs through technological solutions? And if I had had a Carla chatbot interface available where I could check my phone or another device, I would have been able to quickly just find mandatory evacuation areas, sandbags, the nearest shelter, emergency food, open gas stations, pet shelters, and that would be specific to my urgent needs. And then when we get into that relief and that recovery phase, that's where 211 actually provides the free confidential services, and that's where their phone actually been freed up, where they're not in that overwhelming call volume, where it's very difficult for them to scale and manage when disaster strikes,
okay,
especially for some of those urgent questions.
Oh, gotcha, Beth. Okay. Christy is calling back. Let's see if we can get her in on the conversation here telephonically. Hey, Christy, thanks for your persistence and patience. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. I hope you guys are doing well, and I so appreciate you doing this program today.
Oh, our pleasure.
May I just share a little bit about what's happened in Gulf County?
Sure, please. Go ahead.
I did go ahead and send you an email that you can see the enclosure of what the expectation was for evacuation for Gulf County. There were some areas that the expectation was to evacuate. My little bungalow sits 5 blocks back from the bay. And behind my little bungalow is a wonderful wetland that it helps protect us from storms because it allows it to do what it's supposed to do, which is be a basin. Although I'm 5 blocks back from the bay, I ended up having flooding. It was not in my house that was built off-grade, but it was in my outbuildings that were on slabs, so the garage, the utility room, a back living room, et cetera. About a foot of water came through there. So we did not pass Long Avenue, which is a couple of blocks back from the bay. We did not have a mandatory evacuation past that area in Port St. Joe. So that's what was going on. I was at my house, and my family and friends that live outside the area were so concerned about my safety because they were looking at the news and seeing how big this storm was. They suggested strongly I leave, and so at the 11th hour, I did. And I thank God that I did. But when I returned, to say that it was heartbreaking is an understatement. And to see the damage so far back from the bay and to that point, places that aren't in a floodplain, was just unbelievable. And I've lived in Florida for over 50 years, and I've never seen anything quite so devastating as this.
We feel so bad for you. We really, really do, Christy, and that's got to be just beyond heartbreaking. And Kevin, we're not going to make apologies or try to be intercessories here for Gulf County officials, but this did take a lot of folks by surprise. Particularly folks in the media here. This was the third strongest storm to hit the United States, or at least the Southeast.
Yeah, Michael was a unusually unwell-behaved storm. Some of the way it developed, it was in an environment that didn't suggest that it should continue strengthening, and it didn't suggest it should become nearly a Category 5 at landfall, some of the early forecasts. So it did undergo what we would call rapid intensification. Overall, though, the actual forecast track, the path that it was going to take, was very good through all the forecast cycles. There were some slight deviations, but everything was well within the cone, the error cone, which represents an average error for the forecast point based on 5-year averages. So there were no wild swings in the forecast. I will say, though, that storm surge forecasting is one of the biggest challenges the National Weather Service and the National Hurricane Center have. They are still way behind in their ability to get good forecasts for that with long range. That's their weaker point compared to direction and wind speed. And the Hurricane Center actually, the director, the lead forecaster for storm surge unit, and the lead forecaster for the overall track and wind unit, they have been to North Florida. They have visited the counties. They stopped in Leon County, and I had a conversation with them. They wanted to be on the ground to look at what happened, so they can take that data back and try and improve these issues that Christy's talking about, the you know, where the water actually goes in a storm like this, so that we as emergency managers and local governments, when these storms come in the future, we can use this data to guide our decision-making for evacuations. Again, working in Leon County, very focused in Leon County during the storm, but knowing the Gulf County team, I know that what they were doing was what we did here. They used the best data they had from the official sources to make the decision at the time when they had to make the decision. Hopefully, you know, silver lining to this, that what we've seen and what the National Hurricane Center, National Weather Service surveys can obtain informationally can be built back into their modeling processes, and for the future nationwide Gulf Coast, Atlantic Coast, we can get better storm surge forecasts from this and hopefully mitigate and minimize these types of impacts that Christy had.
Yeah, sadly too late to help Christy and those folks out there. But Deanna Frazier, this is going to be a national issue then if we have situations where storms that should be like this turn out to be something more than that. And you have to respond. You have to put the resources in place to take care of this. That's scary.
It is. But, you know, we have these partnerships with the counties, the cities, and the municipalities that go a long ways towards mitigating those factors. Because we're here to help before, during, and after a storm. And so, you know, one of the things that we've learned from previous disasters is the fact that we need to pre-position personnel in those areas that we think are going to be hit hard, pre-positioning commodities in areas that are hit hard, so that those things are on the ground, ready to go once the disaster has hit and we're into recovery mode.
It's called staging, and we'll talk more about that and some other facets of the recovery from Hurricane Michael, not only in the greater Tallahassee-Leon County area, but also all the way out to Panama City, because we are broadcasting via WFSW in Panama City, and we'd love to hear from you, too. And we will be right back here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspectives, and we are talking about Hurricane Michael and the outflow therein. An email quickly from Mickey. He wants to know what SMS info is. And Beth Tracy with IBM, I think you mentioned that. We love our acronyms, particularly when it comes to communications technology. But for Mickey's benefit, what is SMS info? What does that mean?
FMF info. Am I hearing that correctly?
That is correct, yes.
I'm not sure that I messaged that. Could he explain just a little bit more about what he thought he heard?
Okay. We'll see if he can get a clarification to us here via email, which, again, perspectives@wfsu.org, because we have so many moving piece parts of this particular program. Email's a good way to get to us here real fast. Matthew Cavell, you mentioned something about having more resilient kinds of construction without having to go and take out $250,000 loan for a 1,000-square-foot bungalow at beachside. So what can you tell us?
So one of the things we've done here in Leon County, and we've had the opportunity to talk a little bit about it with you and your team, Tom, is a partnership with the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, FLASH. And we were designated here in Leon County in 2017 into this new year as a hurricane-strong community, which runs the gamut of having good, strong building codes that is focused on building citizen resilience during disaster and good communication methods. Well, the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, as headed up by Leslie Chapman Henderson, is spearheading the idea that resilient building codes and resilient homes don't have to be the thing that drains out your bank account necessarily, that it's an option to build for on the table. And again, good opportunity to work with them ongoing for disaster resilience, both in the built homes and in the communications and having stronger neighborhoods. And I think that's one thing as we look into Thanksgiving of next week that we can feel fortunate for here in Leon County is having the strong neighborhoods and the resilient citizens that we do, which made a big difference in how we responded to and continue to recover from Hurricane Michael.
Okay, Mike Martin, what's the situation out there in the extreme western part of Florida in Escambia and in Santa Rosa County? Same type of deal, you guys becoming more resilient when it comes to those things too? You still there, Mike?
I'm sorry, I had problems. I didn't hear your question.
Oh, okay. Matthew Cavell just said that Leon County now has an affiliation with the FLASH program, which provides additional resources to make sure that housing, businesses, all that are more resilient and resistant when it comes to being able to stand up to storms. Do you have a similar program out there in the Pensacola area?
I couldn't answer that specifically. I can tell you, though, from the personal experiences of going through some tornadoes here recently, you could certainly see how homes have changed in design and their ability to sustain their viability in heavy winds. So I imagine there's something similar to that. I'm just not familiar with the program.
Okay, fine. Beth Tracy, Mickey just gave a clarification here. SMS info. He says standard messaging service connected to text messages.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes, that is where we get those text messages through 211 calls. So just as that point of clarification, because of the overwhelming information and also going back to some of those standard questions where we look for the mandatory evacuation areas and the nearest shelter and where we might have a place where our elderly can go, it's through all of that data that United Way provided to us, United Way Worldwide and 211, that we were able to propagate into this cognitive technology, which we call a chat bot, so that the user could have a conversation. Here's my intent. This is what I'm looking for. And based on the data, that SMS, which is just relating to text messages and that data, IBM was able to develop this chat bot for 14 counties. I think it's also relevant to say that when Hurricane Michael came our way, we quickly activated to expand to the counties where Hurricane Michael was created most of that devastation. So IBM heard the need, and we were able to get in touch with United Way, again, strength of our strategic partners, and 211 so that we could expand to those counties where Hurricane Michael was, because those counties were not included initially. This is a new development, and this is, again, as we look at the critical societal issues, and especially with disaster response, relief, recovery efforts, and really enhanced to resiliency efforts, this is where we developed the Carla chatbot from February to June, and then here comes Hurricane Michael. So know that we quickly expanded to those areas as well.
Okay, terrific. My only other question is, since this is so dependent on having a robust digital network in order to work, what happens when the network goes down? As we have seen, you had a lot of digital services in West Florida that essentially were blown out. We're still seeing some nasty signs related to some of the providers that are out there. And if that goes, is there any backup? Do you have anything else that can provide that information if you lose this?
Excellent question, Tom. So this is if you have the access to your digital device or if you can go to a website, and this is where United Way and 211 actually deploy the chatbot on their website so that you can easily go to that through your technology access. However, due to all of the other great services, so it's not IBM alone, but due to all of the other great services and the guests that we have talking today, that's where the resident will go to those services if they don't have power or they can't access something on their device. So this is not the solution for all things. However, if you have that access and your phone's working or you've got a device that you can quickly get some information through the Carla chatbot interface on United Way's site, then you have that benefit. But again, if you don't, then unfortunately, it can't be all things to everyone.
And certainly.
And Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I just wanted to give a little perspective there because there was, without question, significant devastation to cell towers and other communication lines throughout the impact area. But what was amazing is the call volume continued to rise to an incredible level. We saw, and this is not an exaggeration, over a 1,000% increase in normal call volume 3 days after the storm. And the technology that came to our assistance that IBM facilitated, and they did this on their own. I mean, they stepped up to the community needs and developed this without funding, to my knowledge, from any of United Way. This is just something they did to help the community. But what I'm trying to share is when the call volume reaches a crescendo like that, there's literally not enough people to answer the lines. And giving people desperate for information the alternative of using Carla or chat or other messaging systems is a major benefit to getting that information out there. I can't tell you how much it helped folks get vital information post-Michael on where the shelters were, where were the points of distribution for food, because FEMA does an excellent job of positioning those resources and getting them in as soon as they can clear the roads. I mean, but the people need to know how to get it, and having multiple avenues to that information is, I think, vital, and especially when we see the type of communication impact that we saw after Michael. It just the sheer number of towers down and lines down is just mind-boggling.
Well, that's the old saying, you can never have too much communication. To re-emphasize what everyone around this table is also seeing. But given how dependent we are on electronics, on just plain old electricity, Rob McGarrah, the fact that in this particular storm there was essentially a small army of backup to the city of Tallahassee's electric utility crews was, again, just mind-boggling to me to see these trucks staged, waiting to go. And as soon as the winds died down, these folks got to work. What did it take to put that effort together? Because that was, to my way of thinking, just mind-boggling.
Well, we have a nationwide mutual aid network, both within the municipally owned utilities and crossing the lines with cooperatives and investor-owned utilities. We activated that the Saturday before the storm. We identified the needs we needed, and that network started reaching out. Now, because of the path of the storm, we really couldn't look at a lot of Southeast utilities because they didn't know if they were going to be impacted. So we had to go a little farther out. We actually had over 50 cities from 15 states send over 450 linemen down here to help us. And a couple of hundred of those, or 150 of those, were here before the storm hit. We actually asked them to come to Tallahassee and ride the storm out with us so that they could go to work the next morning with our crews, and then we brought a couple hundred tree crews, folks that would cut the trees down from the wires so that our folks could get in and do the work. So at the peak, we had, by Thursday afternoon, we had over 840 people here. We normally have about 145 folks to do that type of work. So we swelled up to 840-plus folks here to help us get our customers back in service. And that was the plan that we had laid out before the storm, and it worked the way we expected it to work.
And amazingly, so many of those crews, once they finished up here, headed west. It looked like a Veterans Day parade in Panama City with the number of bucket trucks that were lined up there ready to go once they finished their work here.
Yes, as we got done restoring our city and could release some of the resources we had, they went to some of the communities to the west. And then after we finished the majority or all of our restoration, other than what we call reconnects, some of our folks went west and helped Talquin Electric in West Gadsden and Liberty County. And then we've had folks in Chattahoochee, Quincy, and Blountstown all the way up until yesterday, helping those municipally owned utilities do reconnects and finish the cleanup of getting their systems back in service.
You mentioned all of the remnants of the storm. Matthew Cavell from Leon County Public Works, you had a pretty good visual here of just how much storm down trees and branches and other detritus that is being collected right now. How big is that?
Yeah, so immediately following the storm, I mean, our saying was if there's a county road, there's at least a tree or two down on it. So immediately digging out of the storm was about 1,100 trees removed from county roads. And that's led to now currently the running average, more than three times as much as we've collected for Hurricane Hermine as what we've collected for Michael. So again, that's nearly 700,000 cubic yards, which I know is tough to visualize, but if you take a football field and take it from goalpost to goalpost and stack that debris in it, now currently that football field is about 40 stories tall, filled with vegetative debris. And we're not done. We've just wrapped up our first pass, and we're sticking around until everything's picked up in the community. And it's going to take a few more weeks, but we're here to the end. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if that ends on almost quadruple what Hermine had brought us in 2016.
And just for a visual reference, 40 stories is one half, again, the height of the Florida Capitol building.
It's an incredible amount of debris, and a big credit to our county works team and also the city for getting all of that picked up, because we know it blocks roads, it blocks sidewalks, and to get most of that picked up in nearly a 3 or 4 week span is pretty impressive.
Deanna Frazier, how do you see FEMA winding down here, even though, as Christy pointed out, in places like Gulf County and Bay County and all that, there is still a need here? How do you see this playing out over the next several weeks?
Well, right now we have a deadline for registration of December 10th. That's Monday, December 10th. So all of the services that we provide cannot get into the hands of the survivors until they register. And so they can do that in several different ways. They can call us at 1-800-621-FEMA. They can go online to disasterassistance.gov, or they can download our FEMA app onto their smartphone or tablet. We also have disaster unemployment assistance that came into play after the disaster happened, and that has been extended. The deadline was supposed to be on Friday. It has now been extended to December 7th, which is a good thing for survivors who lost their jobs as a result of Hurricane Michael. The saying that we have at FEMA is we're going to be here as long as we're needed. And so if that happens to be past the deadline, then we'll be here past the deadline. Our public assistance side of the house, which deals with the cities, counties, municipalities on rebuilding, will be here for some time to come. You know, we still have a joint field office in Orlando following Hurricane Irene last year. So it could be a good chunk of time here.
Just a little bit of time left here. Beth Tracy, I want to ask you here, as far as Carla, the chatbot, is concerned, what are the plans here to expand that further into other places in Florida and beyond?
Thank you, Tom. So we did donate technology and pro bono consulting time and expertise with United Way and 211. And what we are doing is taking that training that we put into use where we did train them, because cognitive technology continues to learn. And United Way is maintaining and expanding the Carla resources as more information becomes available across the state. We are also providing hosting, solution configuration, and maintenance for Carla for 2 years with United Way. And we hope to replicate in other areas. So this is a new development post-Hurricane Irma. We care about the communities where we live and work. We want to make a difference. And then here comes Hurricane Michael, and we quickly activated. So we'd like to expand and replicate as the needs are known.
Terrific. Well, any interest around the table here, guys? Does it sound like something? Kevin?
Well, I just wanted to add another federal resource that's available that does expire tomorrow, November 16th, is Operation Blue Roof. That's conducted through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Again, this is anybody that's listening that's been affected by the disaster. This is Hurricane Michael disaster wide. So all of the counties affected, you're able to register, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will send a survey team out to assess your roof impacts, and then they have follow-on contractors that will come out and they'll make the temporary tarp repairs to your roof if for the qualifying residences. And again, no charge to a resident. Again, though, the deadline to apply is tomorrow, November 16th. That's Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central Time. You can call their number at 1-888-ROOF-BLUE or 1-888-766-3258. To begin the registration process, but we want to make sure that everybody who's been on listening to this, it's possibly been affected, knows about that piece of information.
Yeah, we know about those blue roofs, boy, that's for sure. Folks, that's going to have to do it for this discussion. We really appreciate everyone kicking in. Kevin Peters, Director of Emergency Management for Leon County, Rob McGarrah, City of Tallahassee Electric Utility Manager. Keep fingers, toes, and eyes crossed we don't have another one here before the end of the month, Rob.
I agree with you.
Deanna Fraser, Office of External Affairs for FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. Thanks for coming in. Matthew Cavell, as always, thank you so much, sir, for being part of the conversation. Michael Martin, 211 Northwest Florida Manager, United Way of Escambia County, and Beth Tracy, IBM Corporate Citizenship Manager. Thank you, folks, for being part of a very lively discussion here on Perspectives. I'm Tom Flanagan, and we thank Evan Rossi, also Taylor Cox, for helping hook us all up here in Lydell Rawls on the Interconnects. Next week, this time, instead of being on the airwaves, Perspectives will be sitting down to a joyous Thanksgiving feast and getting into terrible political arguments with relatives and friends. Just kidding. We'll be taking the week off. We'll return on Thursday, November 29th. We'll be talking about getting more folks ready for the new jobs coming our way right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.